Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Get another busy news week. A lot to get into in this midweek edition. Rex, I can see you in yet another Marriott property, but we must start with the news of the hour. As expected, prosecutors in Louisville announced on Wednesday that it was dropping all four charges against Scottie Scheffler, saying essentially there was not enough evidence to move forward in the case against the world number one who, if you somehow missed this, was accused of disobeying and injuring a police officer on his way to the golf course for the second round of the PGA Championship. Rex, you had alluded to this over the past couple of weeks, that this was the most likely outcome. So what then is your reaction to this news break?
To add just to that real quick, it was dismissed with prejudice. And as we all learned, actually, at this event last year, that when something happens with prejudice, that means that it can never be rehappened. That means even if there's new evidence, that they will not bring new charges against Scottie Scheffler. As we learned last year with the framework agreement, that all that litigation went away with prejudice. So we did learn a lesson last year that I think is apropos a year later. It stood out. This dovetails with, I think, what we saw from the police department last week when they released the two videos, the only two known videos that had been circulated up until that point. It shows the arrest, those two videos did, but it didn't show the actual incident between Scottie Scheffler and Detective Brian Gillis, who supposedly got in an interaction or some sort of incident with Scottie. It got dragged, got injured, and then we see the arrest. But we didn't see any of the incident that actually led to the arrest. We also learned last week that Detective Gillis didn't have his body cam video activated, which is against department protocols, and he was reprimanded. Everything was pointing to the idea that this was going to get dropped. And I think you almost have to give the attorneys, the prosecutors credit on this front, because it sounded to me like they combed through whatever evidence they had over the weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and decided that, nope, we don't want anything to do with this. And that's important timing, because Scottie was supposed to be back up in Louisville on Monday to get arraigned on those four counts. Same Monday that he probably would have been flying to the Memorial to play in a signature event and to start a really busy stretch. So it did play out the way we thought it would, and it played out quickly enough that I think this can finally, at least Scottie can finally move on.
Yeah, we don't have any video footage of that initial interaction. And the Jefferson County attorney on Wednesday said that when Scottie Scheffler characterized it as a, quote, big misunderstanding, that is what the evidence that they saw that was corroborated. Just to put a fine tooth comb on this, Rex, Scottie Scheffler's attorney said that Scottie will not be filing any counterclaim against the Louisville police. He just simply wants to move on. And you can check out his statement over on NBCSports.com/golf. I did want to button something up from what that we talked about on Sunday night, following the conclusion of the Charles Schwab challenge. We debated for 7 or 8 minutes whether this looming criminal case was a distraction to Scottie on Sunday. Remember, the Scottie Scheffler shot 71 in the final round. He lost by 5 shots to Davis Riley. That marked now 3 of his last 6 rounds over par on the PGA Tour, when prior to this, he had gone the entire year at par or better. That was not the case, according to Scottie Scheffler. On Sunday night, Scottie Scheffler said it didn't have to do anything to this. He said, in fact, it was tough to play with the news that he had received a day earlier about Grayson Murray, saying that they had grown closer over the past couple of months. Grayson Murray had even spent time in Scottie Scheffler's rental house at the PGA Championship. In the interview clip that was posted following his final round 71 on Sunday, Scottie appeared a bit emotional and said that he was thinking the entire round about the Grayson Murray family. Just wanted to put that out there, because we did discuss that on Sunday night. Sausage fingers up. Please go ahead.
Well, and Stephen Romans, Scottie's attorney, spoke after today's hearing and talked a little bit, and he uncovered a couple things I thought were interesting. One, they planned on Monday to start civil proceedings against the Louisville Metro Police Department, which I'm sure did not go unnoticed by the Louisville Metro Police Department, that, okay, if we're going to stop this, let's stop this now and not let it snowball into something that we probably can't control if it turns into a civil lawsuit. And the other half of it is, and Romans said this, he said he was distracted, quote, distracted by everything that was going on around him. And we talked a little bit about, look, he's really good, clearly, at compartmentalizing. The day he was arrested, he shoots a 66 at a major championship. That's pretty good compartmentalization. However, I think I kind of went to the mat in our last podcast saying that I don't care how good you are at that. And look, Tiger Woods was probably the best at it. It still has a toll. You're still a human being. This is still hanging over his head. And as I kind of did on my report today on Live From, now that this is behind him, he can now turn his focus back to what he does best, be world number one, winning major championships, and being really, really special on the golf course.
Winner of four of his last seven starts, Scotty is in the field next week at the Memorial. Obviously, no longer has to attend the Raymond hearing on Monday of Memorial Week. And then obviously the U.S. Open is the week following that at Pinehurst number two. Then the Travelers Championship, you know, another signature event on the PGA Tour. So it is a busy stretch for Scottie Scheffler. We're hoping, as observers of the game, he can continue what has been an awfully torrid stretch. Also this week, Rex, some big news that actually was leading on the Today Show. How about that? Transcending not just sports, was that Lexi Thompson said this week at the U.S. Women's Open that this will be her final season as a full-time competitor on the LPGA. If you look at her resume, she's an 11-time winner on the LPGA, a long-time Solheim Cup stalwart, but her performance has slipped the last couple of years, almost didn't keep her card for 2024. She's not won since 2019 as she's dealing with a lingering hand injury. But mostly, Rex, she said that she just wanted to step away. She was tired of life in the golf spotlight and will now retire at the age of 29, at least as a full-time player. When you step back, how surprised are you by Lexi's decision to do that for 2025 and beyond?
Not very, actually. And to be honest with you, well, let's put this into the context, and I don't want to make light of this at all, but the conversation turned after Grayson Murray to the mental health of just not golfers, but professional athletes in general. And as we pointed out when we sort of talked about the Grayson Murray tragedy, the idea that even on your best days, this is a really, really lonely job. Even when you have a good day at the golf course, you still go home to a lonely hotel. And if you're dealing with these issues, and Lexi is not, but Grayson clearly was. But if you're dealing with everything else, you're dealing with alcoholism and depression. And I think our colleague at Golf Digest, I believe it was Shane Ryan, kind of wrote a story about this yesterday about Lexi. And I think he called it the complicated relationship that she had with the media and sort of the world around her and living in that fishbowl and how intimidating it can be. And this goes back to, I'll go back to the Tokyo Olympics, when there was a lot of talk about mental health and how being a professional athlete sounds really cool. And it's a great job. And you usually get paid really, really well. But it also comes with, you know, all of the other things that sort of pile on top of you. And it's not an entirely healthy lifestyle. And I think we're starting to understand that better. I think we're starting to recognize sort of the triggers is what I would call them in an athlete when even on a good day, they seem distracted, they seem irritated. All of the things that we know now that, oh, that's what leads you to sort of have these bad nights. And we'd seen it time and time again from Lexi in good times and bad. And like, look, I did not cover the LPGA Tour, so I'm not going to speak to this firsthand, but I think our colleague Beth Ann Baldry was on Live From this afternoon just talking about the idea of how it has been a struggle for Lexi ever since she was a teenager. And she was playing essentially a men's game on the LPGA Tour, but it didn't come as easy as we probably would have expected.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised either by her announcement that she'll retire at the end of this season as a full-time player. I've always viewed golf more like tennis than anything else. And 29 years old in tennis years is actually pretty old, especially when you consider that Lexi Thompson is a unique case who has been a child prodigy qualifying for the U.S. Women's Open at the age of 12. And she essentially lost, Lexi did, all of those adolescent years when so many other teenagers are just finding themselves. And so I always think of Michelle Wee. I don't think it can be overstated that a player who is in a very similar position to Lexi, who had all this acclaim as a teenager, probably wasn't the most well-adjusted young adult. And Michelle, we went to Stanford essentially to make up for lost time and gain those experiences that she was not able to get from the ages of 18 to 22 when she was competing week in and week out on the LPGA. Lexi has been a very complicated figure for a very long time. She has been beloved by fans. She's been beloved by sponsors. But I also don't think she's particularly well known by either her peers on the LPGA. She talked on Tuesday about not having a huge friend group, or the golf media, who she's largely kept at arm's length. She hasn't always been accountable for some of her on-course play, some of her mistakes, some of her losses. But you touched on it, Rex, and I think it's an important discussion to have, because I think in light of the Grayson Murray tragedy, you know, it's shining a brighter light on how difficult this professional life is. When you think about an athlete retiring from a team sport, they don't talk about missing the competition or the training or the injuries that they had to overcome. They always talk about that they're going to miss most the camaraderie in the locker room. But golf and tennis, as I used the example earlier, is a very lonely pursuit. And it's not for everyone, and it's certainly not for every personality type. And you throw in the fact that Lexi was a superstar who grew up without some of those social guardrails that so many other get to experience, and who faced a torrent of attention and pressure and scrutiny. And I can only imagine how difficult this pro journey has been for her. And hopefully she finds something that's satisfying. Hopefully she finds something that's fulfilling now as she looks to retire as a full-time player, as she now enters she turns 30 next year.
And I will be curious going forward. And I actually got this phone call yesterday from a source on the PGA Tour that's been out here for a long time. And we were talking more about Grayson Murray, but certainly this applies to Lexi Thompson as well in the conversation that we're having. The idea that I think the PGA Tour university system is brilliant. And I think it probably took too long for the PGA Tour to come around to the idea that, oh, we need to create a pathway for the best players in college golf to go directly to the PGA Tour. But this person pointed out sort of the obvious, that not all of these players are going to be prepared for what they face. And I guess Nick Dunlap would be the example that we would all throw out there. We keep waiting for Nick Dunlap to show that spark, to show that magical touch that he had at the American Express when he broke through and won as an amateur. However, you and I both would agree, like, he has struggled. It's not been easy for him for whatever reason. And I would leave that up to Nick Dunlap to sort of explain exactly what he has struggled with. But certainly if you just look at the results, they haven't been there. And this source's point was the PGA Tour needs to be really, really careful when it comes to this, because there's going to be 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that end up on the PGA Tour who simply aren't ready for that. They're simply not ready to have a framework around them. They're simply not ready to be on their own and have to make decisions like, when do I travel? How do I travel? Where do I stay? Who am I friends with? What's my day going to look like? It sounds simple to you and I because we're fully formed adults. But I, as someone who's got a 20-something-year-old, a couple of 20-something-year-olds, I can tell you they're not qualified to land on the PGA Tour right now. They would be lost. They would be confused. They'd probably be really, really scared. So I think this is an important lesson for not just the LPGA Tour, but the PGA Tour to learn as well, because it's littered with minefield.
I remember when the PGA Tour University system was unveiled. I was covering college golf and paying attention to it more intensely than I am right now, but I remember
you're not college golf now,
not nearly as intensely. And no, I'm not at the NCAA championship this week. But I remember there was skepticism when that program was unveiled, thinking, "Oh, well these players aren't going to stick in school until they're graduating seniors. Like, you can't be depriving them of these opportunities to go turn pro." And yet, the exact opposite has happened. That you actually see players delaying their pro announcements to come back to school, not just because of the opportunities that it's granting them, with the number one player in the PGA Tour University rankings getting a full card essentially for a year and a half, numbers 2 through 5 getting full Korn Ferry Tour status. It isn't even about that. It's more just making sure everything is settled, making sure everything is prioritized properly, making sure you have a team around you that will give you the best opportunity for success when you do, you know, turn in your amateur card and become a professional. We have seen that time and time again, where over the past couple of years, whether it's Crystal Lamprecht, whether it's Gordon Sargent, whether it's Michael Thorbjornsson, all of these players had the acclaim, had the accolades, probably even had the game to turn pro when they had an opportunity a year or two ago, and yet they've delayed that. So I do think there is a cultural shift among college golfers and college coaches, I think, just to make sure everyone is ready to go by the time. And I think you're seeing it now with the quick ascension to the Korn Ferry Tour or even onto the PGA Tour. Players are more prepared now, and they don't quite have the same learning curve you would have whether you're leaving, you know, halfway through a semester, your sophomore or junior year.
One of our Canadian colleagues was working on a story today and asked Rory McIlroy specifically about the idea of how long did it take you when you turned pro to get what you felt like the right team in place around you, whoever that was, whether that was a trainer, or swing coach, or manager, whatever the case may be. And Rory said it took him a minute. Like, he just didn't fall onto the PGA Tour or at that point the European Tour and have everything in place. If he didn't, it's not fair to expect Nick Dunlap or any of these other young players to just show up, and again, to use the word again, to be fully formed adults and to know exactly what they're getting into. It's a huge transition, and anybody can speak to this, where you go from college, where you don't essentially have to worry about anything, and now all of a sudden, you have to worry about everything. You are an economy in and of yourself, and there's people who are going to depend on you. You're suddenly going to have to start paying bills. Like, all of those things pile up really quickly when you're a 21, 22-year-old person, even if you're a mature person. So I do see where you're coming from on this, and I will actually circle this back around, because I know you and I talked at length about this when the decision came for Nick Dunlap. And you actually made the take that you thought he should delay it. You thought he thought he should wait until at least after NCAAs, which are going on as we speak. I was against that for the obvious reasons that this is a very unique moment in time on the PGA Tour, because they're transitioning to whatever the signature events are going to become in the future. And that suddenly he had access to all of these things, and it was best, if you laid it out professionally, to make sure you maximize every single one of those starts. In retrospect, I would actually say maybe he should have considered hanging around longer.
So these are the structural changes that have occurred at the professional level that were not available to Lexi Thompson on the LPGA. She turned pro at the age of 15 or 16. She won. She was a quick winner. She even applied for an age waiver with the LPGA. Like, they were bending over backwards to get this young American star on the tour, and obviously bypassed a lot of these sort of structural changes. I also think, though, that there's sort of a societal element to this that has been overlooked. And if you look, you know, you and I cover the PGA Tour, not necessarily the LPGA, but so many PGA Tour players, and we're seeing this now in the LPGA world, are building out their teams. You know, sure, a lot of it is for competitive reasons, to have trainers and dietitians and physios and swing coaches and putting gurus and statisticians. But I also think there's a social aspect of having an entourage that you can lean on and sort of insulate yourself from sort of the outside pressure, from media, from fans, maybe even from parents or any other expectations. I also think, Rex, that it can be more fulfilling and personally rewarding to be part of something that isn't just for yourself. You know, you're all in it collectively. And I think that has been something that's been lacking over Lexi Thompson's career, certainly. There was a loneliness to Grayson Murray's story as well that he has talked about at length, which I don't think is all that uncommon on the PGA Tour as well. Like, this is a very lonely pursuit. And this change to have a more team element involved in these entourages that travel week to week on their respective tours, I think is an element to sort of shield yourself from some of these aspects to professional golf that could be pretty troubling.
Well, and you're talking to someone who's sitting in a lonely hotel room right now, so I certainly can understand where that's coming from. I will say, and again, this goes back to the source that I spoke to yesterday, just about the idea. You're right. It's really important to get a team around you that not only do you trust, but that is good for you. But this source did point out the obvious thing when it comes to assembling your team. These people now work for you. And as a rule, you're not going to tell the person, your employer, that no, you're going down a bad path here. Like, you really have to find a unique situation where it's not only people who work for you. They just can't be employees. They have to be people that you trust and people that will be honest with you. Because I think at some point, Lexi Thompson probably struggled with that.
I will be paying attention this week to the U.S. Women's Open, where, of course, Nelly Korda is the headliner, winner of six of her past seven starts. Speaking of teams, she talked about how all but one week this year on the LPGA, she has had either her swing coach or her swing coach's top lieutenant on property with her, and that has made a huge difference, not just, as we're talking about, from the social aspect, from the technical aspect as well. Obviously, you're at the Town Place Suites in Ontario for the RBC Canadian Open. Not Ontario, close enough.
No, it is. You're right. North it is. It's, okay. It's Hamilton. Okay. Hamilton, which is in Ontario. So okay. Sorry about that.
North of the border, Rory McIlroy, the defending champion, two-time winner of this event. Give the people something to look forward to, Rex, this week from your coverage.
Rory, because if you go back to, he's the highest ranked player in the field, and he's by far the runaway favorite to win this week, and it's for good reason. He's come by that, honestly. The last time he played this championship on this golf course, Hamilton Golf and Country Club, he set a scoring record for the tournament, and this tournament's been around since 1914, if I had the date there, so it's been a minute since this one's been on the map. So it's not a huge surprise that he was able to do that. And he did it with a final round 61, which is also a record in this event. And just the way he's playing now. I think I spoke with Rory today, and he seemed to have that familiar swagger, is probably not the right word. But there was a pop in his step where he seemed a little bit more relaxed than he was at the PGA Championship. There were obviously a lot of things going on at the PGA Championship, both on and off the golf course, for Rory with the news of the divorce from his wife coming out the Monday of that tournament. I think now he's a little bit further down the road. He told me today that he took pretty much last week completely off. He went to a wedding in Italy. He was there for 5 days. He said he probably hit a grand total of 150 golf balls since he left the PGA Championship. He's not worried about rust, but I think this is kind of what he needed. And I will say, and I would encourage anyone to go and look at the interview I did with him. I was really curious to see how he feels about the experiment he did with his schedule this year. And as you and I have talked about, he's on pace to play 27 events this season, which is a lot. Normally he plays about 22 events. And I wanted to see, at least one, three times, he's had a successful season, but does he feel like going down this road is something that is sustainable? And he was really quick to say, nope, that I won't be doing this again. And to
keep 35.
He's 35, but this is the first of four straight events. It'll be this week. It'll be next week at the Memorial U.S. Open, and then Travelers, which will be the last signature event of the season. He went through a grind. I think it was 6 of 7 weeks playing in a row. He said, looking back, he's glad he did it. He's glad he actually forced himself to play through whatever it is he was dealing with in his swing, whatever that was, whether it was putting or his driving or whatever the case may be, because he goes, he feels like he plays better if he just tries to play his way out of something as opposed to sitting at home on a range in South Florida trying to find the answers in the dirt. However, at 35 years old, as you pointed out, has no interest in playing 27 events going forward.
PGA Tour has to desperately hope that Rory McIlroy figures into the proceedings and can only mirror what happened last year with Nick Taylor's 72-foot putt, the shot of the year, indisputably, to win the Canadian Open.
He's the logo this week. Did you see that?
More than a half decade. Very cool. Very cool. Basically just flipping the putter, if you have not seen it. A very cool logo. Great marketing idea from the folks at the RBC Canadian Open as well. That's going to do it for this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex and I will be back on the podcast Sunday night to recap the RBC Canadian Open as well as the U.S. Women's Open. The following day, Rex and I will be involved with golf's longest day, U.S. Open final qualifying. He will be in Canada. I will be at a site in Georgia. Very much looking forward to that. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back on Sunday night for a full recap of the week's events.